Talk about the fact that, you know, I'm almost afraid to drive on I-24, especially in the evening, whether it's in Clarksville or whether it's in Murfreesboro. Every week or two, there's a drive-by shooting, there's a road rage, and people have been killed, numerous. And that's just one of the things. You know that murder is up, you know that robbery's up, you know that everything is, people are just angry all the time. And people don't even make any excuse for their rage. Yeah, that lady, I was behind her for 5 miles and I couldn't get, she was going too slow and I couldn't get around her. And so finally I just had enough. Now, why is this? What's going on? What's the problem, if you will? And I want us to talk about anger. And I think in the minds of many, anger is not a sin anymore. In fact, anger is not only okay, it's justified, if you will. And so I want us to think about why this is. I want us to think about not only the answers that are given, but what the real answer, the real fundamental problem is. And so if you would, just bear with me for this first slide, because I'm going to talk about what the psychologists say causes anger. And certainly, you know, this is one from the last 2 or 3 years, that high level of uncertainty which causes anxiety. And I mean, between COVID and the riots and everything else and the banks failing and so on and so forth, is there a high level of uncertainty? Yeah. You don't know what the price of something's going to be, a loaf of bread's going to be when you go to the store. You don't know what the price of whatever your favorite meal at your favorite restaurant is going to be anymore. Every time you go, it seems like it's gone up. And so certainly, is there a lot of uncertainty which causes anxiety? What am I going to do? How am I going to make it? What about, you know, the crime, etc.? They'll also say that inequality and injustice cause anger. And I mean, that seems to be one of the excuses that's put forward anyway. Isolation from others. And again, you think about COVID, it was great for that, wasn't it? And I mean, it wasn't so bad here. But in some states, where they couldn't go out of their house, the kids couldn't play in the backyard for over a year. You were working at home. You didn't see your family. You didn't see your neighbors. You didn't see, that was something that I think we were made as social beings, and so that does cause problems, cause anger. And one of the other results of COVID was not only use, but expanded use. The rate of alcohol consumption went way up. And that leads to abuse of drugs as well. And so all of these things, you know how people have a tendency to be when they're high, when they're drunk. And I've heard of friendly drunks. A sister who's passed on, who said that when she was drunk before she was a Christian, she could say the most beautiful prayers because, you know, she was just very peaceful and so on. And so all of these things certainly could cause us to become angry. But you know, and you may have already thought this in your mind, all of these things have always existed. There's not a one of them that has not been here in all of our lifetime. And so then we ask the question again, why are people showing their anger so much more now? And I think some of that anger's been there, but now we don't have any problem showing it. In fact, it's a good thing if we do. But why has this changed? And there's one very simple answer. They don't have God. Now, the vast majority of people would never even, they wouldn't even think of this. But we know that's the answer. They don't have God. And therefore, they don't have God on their side. They don't know God's laws, etc. They don't know who God is. And that's one of the reasons that people are so angry. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and you may remember this verse, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, this is at the end of the to everything there is a season song. And you remember it's a time for this, a time for that, a time for the other. Now, verse 9 begins, "What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its times. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that, or so that, whichever one your translation says, that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning." And I think the idea is more likely that of we cannot, not that we can, because we can't. And Solomon earlier in this book says so. But I want us to just think about what he has said here. He has put eternity in their hearts. God has put in our hearts, and this is not culture, this is not anything else. This is God has put inside us. It's intrinsic. As one person has said, there's a hole in our heart. And we're not talking about the blood pump, of course. We're talking about our mind. There's a hole in our heart that only God can fill. And people are looking everywhere for peace, for happiness. Some of them are looking in the Eastern religions. But that may soothe them for a little while, but it doesn't fill that hole. Good works of every kind, whether it's the climate, whether it's animals, whatever it is, that doesn't fill the spot. There's never enough they can do. In order for us to have peace, we have to know God. And this is a quotation from Augustine, who in the 300s was about as wicked as they get. He had money, his family had wealth, and at some point he finally woke up and realized this is not it. And he is quoted as saying, "Our hearts, O God, were made for you." Now, he could have also said, "and by you," but "and for you." "And never shall they rest," our heart, "until they rest in you." Our spirit will not be at rest, at peace, until we have a relationship with God. And this is just a quote in one of these. This is one of those who knows who said it. It's so simple. No peace, no God. No peace, no God, no peace. And you know, it sounds the same, but when you read it, and I think there's a lot of wisdom there. When we don't know God, and I'm not saying we don't have Him, I'm saying we don't know Him. And we're not just saying that we know about Him, that we know God, that we know who He is, that we know His character, that we know what, at least some degree of what His love is and what it means. we can't have peace because we're always going to be restless. We're always going to be looking. And so when we ask the question, why are people so angry? It's because an ever-growing number of people in this country and in the world, they're way ahead of us. I mean, they're probably 20, 30 years ahead of us. But in this country, the number of people who know God, who even believe there is a God, is diminishing rapidly. The old people who believe that, at least to some degree, they're passing on. The young people who are coming up, they've been taught that there is no God. And you know what? You keep tell people something often enough, they believe it. And that's why people are so angry. But then let's think about another question. Why don't people restrain their anger? And this is something that I think we all have seen. We all know that people have been angry in the past. We know that black people have been angry because indeed they were mistreated. They were not treated equally in the past. But in the past, they just kind of, many of them didn't say anything. Why is that? And we could go on and list all the other things. But why don't people restrain their anger today? Well, you know, we were taught it was polite, but now, no, that's not the reason. It's not polite or not polite. It goes back to the very same thing. They don't have God. And when you don't have God, when you don't know God, you don't fear God. And so when somebody says, well, God says, well, that's not, the Bible said, that doesn't mean anything to you. But the sad thing is that the result of no fear of God is that there's really comes to be no fear of any authority. There's no fear of the federal government. There's no fear of the state government. There's no fear of the local police, the highway patrolman. You fill in the blank. Mother, father. There's no fear of anyone. And by fear here, it is fear, but it's also respect. And how did we get to the point that law is not enforced? Laws that 10 years ago would have been enforced. Laws that 20 years ago, the same senators and congressmen that are now crying for defund the police were on the completely opposite side. Because if there's no God, there's no authority. And that's why people are, and that's where that's why we are where we are. They have no sense of right and wrong. That just doesn't exist. And as Matthew's pointed out several times, you know, it's my truth and your truth. Well, is there really two truths? I mean, there may be some things that it's my opinion and your opinion, but there's not two truths. And so if there's no truth, then we do what we can do. And I think we all are painfully aware that anger can lead to sin. And I want you to go with me back to Genesis chapter 34. To Genesis chapter 34, that which Larry read for us earlier. And we're going to begin our reading this time in verse 25. And they, you know, they demanded that all the men of the city be circumcised. And Hamor and his son persuaded all the men. And we're not going to go into all of that, but they persuaded them. So they were all circumcised, all on the same day. Well, on the third day, It says, when they were in pain because of the circumcision, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. It doesn't say all the men. It says all the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword. And they took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. And whether this is all the sons or whether it's these two, I lean toward all of them. They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, and all their wealth. All their little ones and their wives they took captive, and they plundered even all that was in the houses. Now, why did they do this? Because they were angry. And you might say, well, they have a right to be angry. That may very well be. But they sinned in doing this. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 25. 1 Samuel 25. And again, anger is one of those things that we all struggle with from time to time. Anger is something that men have a problem with. All of you men have that problem. Yeah, and so do I. That's why I said men. Here in 1 Samuel chapter 25, we're just going to begin reading at verse 10. And notice what anger did to a man that was called the man after God's own heart. A man that did so many good things, that was so righteous. And a woman saved him on this occasion. But in verse 10, well, excuse me, I'm going to tell you. David was out in the wilderness with his 600 men, 600 soldiers. They were basically out there as vagabonds. One of the places that they had been for a while was in Carmel. And there was a man named Nabal who had a lot of flocks. And while they were there, they protected him, his flocks, and his servants from marauders and so on and so forth. And so when David heard that Nabal was throwing a feast because he had slaughtered meat for his shearers, and that would have been a time of feasting, David sent 10 of his young men to him to see if they would share with David. Because indeed, David and his army had been very helpful to them. And so in verse 10, they have made their plea to Nabal. Then Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants to nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to men whom I do not, when I do not know where they are from?" Now, can you imagine how insulted these young men were? These 10 messengers from David. And you can imagine that all the way back to camp, they are mumbling and grumbling, and I don't know why we help these people, and this is ridiculous, and the very idea that he should talk of David that way, and so on and so forth. Verse 12. So David's young men turned on their heels and went back, and they came and told him, David, all these words. Then David said to his men, "Every man gird on his sword." So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies. What purpose? Why is David going with 400 armed men to Nabal's house? You know the answer. He's going to kill Nabal. And if you continue reading, one of the servants of Nabal's house is talking to Abigail, and he says, "And the men were very good to us. So you need to decide what you're going to do, because I just know that they're coming here to kill every man in this household." Now, brethren, my point here, and I don't want to go into what Abigail did, because she was a very wise woman. But what the point I want to make is that David, his anger was so strong that he just, we're out of here and we're going to kill this man and get everything he has and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What caused him to be ready to sin in that way? His anger. And in the New Testament, we read something very similar in James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. James here says very clearly that we should be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Why? Because the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God. And I want you to think the last time you got really angry, did you do what God would have you to do? Probably not. I didn't. I don't, typically. And, you know, now they've come through with studies that say that the part of the brain that reasons, that logically works through things, is completely shut down when we get angry. Huh. Imagine that James would know that. I think pretty clearly. So certainly, anger can lead to sin. And we could go on and on and on, not even getting personal about us and ourselves. But we could go on and on and on. So let's talk for a few minutes about how we can control our anger. And I think first, one of the first things, and this is, I'm not saying it exactly the way that James does, but it's right there in James 1:19. Every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Let's go back to Proverbs. Because interestingly enough, for some reason, the book of Proverbs has a few things to say about anger. In Proverbs chapter 15, there at verse 18, if you will. 15:18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. Takes the contention level down. Why? Because he's slow to anger. In Proverbs 18, verse 13. Proverbs 18, verse 13. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. What's he saying? He's foolish and he's going to be embarrassed. I've been embarrassed more than a time or two. And so the idea of listen before we speak. Be slow to get angry. And again, that's also there in James chapter 1. And I mean, how many of you remember being told, count to 10. When you get angry, count to 10 before you say anything. Well, we're all smirking now. But is it true? Oh, yeah. There's a reason that kept being said. And that's why numerous generations were told, count to 10 before you say anything. Because when we're angry, we need to stop. We need to think. In Proverbs 19, there at verse 11, the discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. The discretion. A man who thinks, a man who reasons before he speaks, that's going to be, it's going to make him slow to anger, and that's going to be something, a crown, if you will. And then going back to the New Testament, Ephesians chapter 4 talks about don't let your anger linger. And that's my wording, not the scriptures. Verse 26, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. And you notice verse 27 is connected completely there. Nor give place to the devil. What connection has the devil got to do with when we're angry? Plenty. And again, you may remember, you may think of an occasion when you knew that because you didn't let it go, the devil got in there. And when it says, don't let the sun go down on your wrath, again, that's something that we know is very wise. Because the longer the anger brews, you know what happens. The stronger it is, the harder it is to let it go. But that's not easy. Always. There are times it is not a big deal. But that's not easy. And yet that's God's command to the new man, the Christian, the one who is no longer living in the world. In the book of Romans in chapter 12, in the duties there, again. And this starts off with, brethren, by the mercies of God that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And the rest of this chapter just goes on to talk about what we should do as Christians, what characteristics we should have, what should be important to us. And it's here at the end. I don't think it's because it's the least important, but it just happens to be here at the end. And it says in verse 19, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Now, this is the New King James. I believe, I know the King James says it. I think even the American Standard says, rather give place to wrath. Well, what does that sound like? You know, don't avenge yourselves, but just get angry. No, I think the newer versions, the newer translations are very correct in saying, give place to the wrath of God. Give place to God, because if you continue reading, it says, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. What wrath are we to give way to? The wrath of God. Not ours, because it's not going to work out well. And we know that would be contrary to all the things that we've already seen. So as we think about these things, we need to realize that this is a serious matter. And we're going to go back to Genesis, now to chapter 59. Simeon and Levi. 49, sorry, did I say 59? Genesis 49. Simeon and Levi are old enough that they have children, probably even grandchildren. Their father is old. He is about to die. He's on his deathbed, as we would say. And before he dies, here in Genesis 49, he gives them the blessings. And he gives each one their blessing. And this is not just a blessing, a generic blessing. This is a blessing, but it's also telling their futures, if you will. And we're going to begin at verse 1. And Jacob called his sons together and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, the excellency of power. You should have been had the right of the firstborn. You should have been that person. That was yours. But you were unstable as water. You shall not excel. Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." He's not going to be the firstborn. "Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man." We just read that they slew a lot of men. "And in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." Now this took place. They were scattered. The Levites were in all 12 tribes. Simeon was scattered in the midst of Judah. But number 2 and number 3, they weren't the firstborn either. That went to number 4. And that was Judah. Now, brethren, I want you just to think for a minute. And this is something that, you know, oftentimes we think of the firstborn got a double portion. But that really was the least. The firstborn became the patriarch. When the father died, God spoke to him. He was the father of the family. And that right was lost to both Simeon and Levi because of their anger. And so, you know, when we think about the Messiah, do we think of Levi? Well, only because Hebrews says that Christ is greater than the Levitical priest. Do we think of Simeon? Not at all. We think of Judah because of their sin. What did their anger cost them? A great deal. And I want you to consider, and I'm not asking for true confession here. I just want you to think about, what has anger cost you? And we're not going to take too long, but I think that's something we all need to think about from time to time. And then the final question we're going to ask is, what will it cost you eternally? Because if you lost everything in this world because of anger, that would be nothing. That would be just trash. But if you lose heaven, and the anger, the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God, that's why we're told, be angry and sin not. We have to overcome it.